Hi everyone, and welcome to one more episode of the All Plane Podcast, where we talk with movers and shakers that are redefining the future of commercial aviation. As usual, before we start, I would like to remind you that all previous episodes of this podcast, as well as many other aviation stories, are available on the All Plane website. That's allplane.tv, allplane.tv. By the way, there you can also subscribe to the newsletter that I send roughly every week with curated stories, mostly, but not only, about sustainable aviation. And now let me welcome today's guest, Mark Tembleke, who is the Senior VP Portfolio Strategy at Avolon, one of the world's largest aircraft leasing companies based in Dublin. In addition to this, Mark is also the head of Avolon E, which is the arm of Avolon that focuses on specifically on electric aircraft and advanced air mobility. As we will soon discuss here on the podcast, Avolon has been one of the, let's say, early supporters of the eVTOL category, and it has currently the largest eVTOL order book of any company out there, with 500 of Vertical Aerospace's VX4 eVTOLs, by the way, all of them already placed, in principle, with a handful of airlines from all over the world, including Virgin Atlantic, Gol from Brazil, Japan Airlines, Air Greenland, and Air Asia, just to name a few. What's more, Avolon has managed to place all these 500 eVTOLs in a record time of only 9 months. But as impressive as this is not the only topic we're going to be talking about, because I also took this opportunity to ask Mark to share some insights about how the aircraft leasing market works, since I've always had the impression that this is a part of the industry that it plays an absolutely essential role, but is not that well known outside of financial circles. And of course, we are also going to touch upon other interesting projects that Avolon is currently working on, such as its involvement in the Airbus Zero-E project that aims to launch a hydrogen-powered aircraft between a decade, a pretty ambitious goal. And connected to that, how would a successful launch of a hydrogen aircraft affect the valuation of all the other conventional aircraft out there? Well, this is another point that is obviously of much interest to aircraft lessors, and one that Mark is also keen to talk about. So there's lots to discuss today on today's episode. That's why, without further ado, I would like to welcome Mark to the podcast. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Great. It's great to be here, Mikael. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, likewise. Great to speak with you again. I remember last time we met was in Barcelona, having breakfast and reviewing some of the news in the industry, because Avolon, the company you work for, is quite an active player in some of the specific segments of the aviation industry that we've been touching up on in here in this podcast, like innovation, sustainability. We'll see this soon. But first of all, I just would like to introduce you and the work you do at Avolon, which is one of the leading aircraft leasing firms with over 1,000 aircraft committed. I think you have right now, from what I've seen on your website, you have over 500 aircraft owned and already operational. Exactly. And close to 500, I think 400 and something, that are committed and expected to be delivered in the coming years. So it's a pretty big operation. We're talking about more than 1,000 aircraft total. And then we can talk a little bit more about this fascinating business that is the leasing aircraft leasing industry.
Absolutely, Mikael. As it's a pleasure to be on your podcast. I've been listening some of your episodes, and it's great to have the opportunity to chat with you today. As you said, I'm currently working in Avolon. I run our portfolio strategy team. And in a nutshell, what we do is we try to predict what's going to happen in the market and help our business make better decisions. Some of my colleagues make fun of us thinking we have a crystal ball somewhere. We actually don't. But in a nutshell, what we are looking at in the team is all things around market analysis and market forecasting. We look as well as our fleet strategy, looking at what aircraft we should be buying and selling at each given point in the investment cycle. And importantly as well for our conversation today, we also look at our sustainability strategy. So we have published a couple of sustainability reports already. They usually go out in Q1 of each year. So I encourage the audience to go take a look. But in a nutshell, that's what we do in the team. Just about myself, I'm an aerospace engineer like you, Mikael. I'm from Catalonia, Barcelona. And it's great that you continue interviewing people from our town. It's great. It's great to have the
Indeed,
chance to speak.
we actually had the coincidence that we had John Sindreu, the Wall Street Journal columnist covering the aviation industry, just a few weeks ago. That was just a mere coincidence. It's not it just happened like that. But yeah, it's great to see fellow Catalans working in the industry in such prominent places around the world.
So, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, as I said, I'm an aerospace engineer. I worked in Airbus for 6 years, selling aftermarket solutions to leasing companies, and that's how I discovered the world of aircraft leasing. That's really the spark of it. Like many other people, I wouldn't have known much about the sector when I was studying or when I started my career. It is, and we'll talk about it shortly, I'm sure. It is a super crucial part of the aviation environment. It explains all, if not, you know, a bigger part of the growth of the industry in the last 3 decades. And that's a business I discovered while at Airbus. And as soon as I had the opportunity, I decided to move my family to Dublin to join Avolon in 2019. And since then, you know, Avolon, as much as the entire leasing industry, has gone through a lot of exciting developments, some more predicted than others during COVID and the recovery after that. And it has been a very exciting journey since then. Today, as you mentioned, we're one of the biggest players in our sector, actually number two by number of aircraft. We have the world's largest order book in the leasing industry, as you pointed out, over 440 aircraft on order. And I would like to say, the leading leasing company in terms of sustainability commitments and ambition in supporting the industry transitioning to net zero operations at some point in the future.
Yeah, indeed. I think that's one of the topics I would like to discuss further into the podcast. But I would say first, maybe it's good if we talk a little bit about the leasing business in general, because obviously airlines and aircraft manufacturers get a lot of media coverage, but the leasing companies are a very important player in this industry, and one that actually provides, I don't know if that's the right word, but it provides a bit of, let's say, aircraft liquidity in the sense that it enables the dynamism of the industry by making this pool of aircraft available to the airlines that are either growing or that are starting up. And it's really fascinating how companies like Avolon make this huge aircraft commitments years in advance. And here, I guess, is where you come into play, like your team comes into play in kind of trying to anticipate what the demand is going to be, what sort of aircraft are going to be in demand. And there's quite a few parameters here to take into account, economic and but also technological. So in broad lines, let's define a little bit how this business works. So basically, you guys, company like Avolon, commit, you buy aircraft from companies like Airbus and Boeing. Mm-hmm. I've seen that you operate with both types. I think you are more a bit more heavily invested in Airbus at the moment in your portfolio.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we are.
Just but you have both.
Yeah, just to exactly. Yeah,
and some Embraer as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, the key to a successful leasing company is diversification. But before we get into those weeds, just stepping back. So, what does a leasing company do, right? So we are essentially playing the arbitrage between the cost of capital of an airline and the availability of aircraft, right? So what does that mean in less technical terms? When airlines go buy aircraft, they have multiple ways to pay for those aircraft, right? So you could see them paying cash, you could see them raise capital from their shareholders, or as it would have been in the case in, you know, in the 1960s, 70s, and a bit of the 80s, airlines primarily raise debt. So when you're an airline raising debt in the capital markets, your lenders will look at your capacity to pay those debts back, right? So they look at your cash flows. So the reality is that airlines have traditionally been more volatile businesses than, let's say, you know, other parts of the aviation ecosystem. Their earnings, as you know, change every quarter. They are very, very open to demand shifts, geopolitical tensions, economic factors, etc.
An exogenous shock.
Those are very exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we have seen recently.
Exactly. Very exciting businesses to be part of, but it's financially, they're a bit of a roller coaster, right? So when you are a lender and you look at that capacity to pay debts back, you're going to put a higher cost of funding or cost of debt for those kind of companies, right? So it makes, you know, most airlines actually struggle to raise debt at attractive cost of capitals to pay for aircraft, with some exceptions, of course, in the US and in Europe. Airlines are able to raise debt attractively in those places and in some big economies in Asia, but generally speaking, airlines do not attract such an attractive cost of capital. So that's where leasing companies come in. So our business model is to buy aircraft from manufacturers or even from airlines, put them back on lease, so rent them back to the airline for usually 6 to 12 years, depending on the type of aircraft and the age of the airplane. And that creates a source of cash flows that is very stable. So when we are looking to raise debt from our banks or our investors, we are able to attract a much lower cost of capital due to stability of our cash flows and the ability for us to move airplanes. So if one airline stops paying us for whatever reason, or we struggle with certain jurisdiction, we simply move the aircraft. It's not like, you know, real estate. You can actually move a building, but you can indeed move an aircraft. So that makes our credit profile quite attractive, makes us raise capital at a more attractive level. And ultimately, we are able to pass that on to airlines who are able to, you know, pay actually a more attractive lease rental every month than they would pay if they were to raise that capital themselves. The key element here on why this works and why that is such an important part of the aviation ecosystem.
And I guess that also lowers the CapEx requirements for any entrepreneur that wants to start an airline or an airline that wishes to expand the fleet in a relatively short notice. They can go to you, get an aircraft on whichever terms that, you know, the market dictates, but then you have this ability to place aircraft at relatively short notice. I don't know how flexible this is, how flexible the leasing industry is to supply aircraft to airlines, mm-hmm. Particularly in times where there's some, let's say, scarcity in booming times.
Yeah. So you're touching a crucial point, and the fact that the leasing industry has grown so much. It's because it's benefited from certain points in the cycle where it has played an outsized role in supporting aviation. So look, leasing companies make most money when there's a shortage of aircraft or a shortage of capital or both. When you have both, it's like the perfect storm, right? As you pointed out, and we talked about the cost of capital just a couple of minutes ago, but you touched on the aircraft, right? So what lessors do, especially those that are bigger scale and have the capacity to make big aircraft commitments, we go out and buy airplanes from manufacturers 4, 5, 6 years out, right? So we placed an order, just to give you an example, last year at Airbus, and we committed to take 100 A321 NEOs, and those aircraft will start delivering towards the end of the decade and into the beginning of next decade. So that gives us an ability to lock in supply. So when those aircraft are now not available, when an airline is actually going to Airbus asking for airplanes, and the earliest they can get is 2031, they immediately go to Avolon or our competitors, although they have less aircraft available. They go to us and say, look, I actually need aircraft much sooner. Can we talk? And because aircraft are in short supply right now, our pricing power is much larger. And that's, as I said, where lessors are more successful. In terms of, just to put this in context, right? So how has this industry grown so big to the point it accounts for nearly half of the aircraft that are owned worldwide, or operated worldwide, I should say? This, as I said, has been growing through different tailwinds. Probably the biggest one we saw going back to the late 80s, early 90s was this huge wave of airline deregulation. So suddenly, government opened up the skies in many parts of the world. So that has happened in the US sooner than that, actually, in the 70s. It happened in Europe in the 90s and in some Asian countries from there onwards. So that gave, to your point, a lot of aviation entrepreneurs the idea to start airlines. And the best way to start an airline is not to go to the bank asking for $500 million of debt, is to, you know, start lean with a thin balance sheet and, you know, try not to own everything, right? And that's where the leasing companies come in. And that's where we got our first tailwind. And again, playing that capital arbitrage that really helped propel the industry from 16% of the global fleet in the 1990s, early 1990s. We're now at 47%.
Wow. So it's
So
about
that has
half.
been a massive wave.
Half of the airliners that are flying right now in the world are owned by a leasing company of some sort.
Exactly. And just to put this in another context with more figures. So if you look at the number of aircraft that airlines owned in 2016, which is not so far away, and you look at the number of aircraft airlines own today, that's actually gone down. So there's less airplanes owned by airlines today than 8 years ago. And that's not because the fleet has shrunk. Actually, the fleet has grown significantly. There's 3,000 additional aircraft in the last 8 years flying out there, but actually less are owned by airlines than they were 8 years ago, right? So that's just to illustrate those tailwinds that we have benefited from. One of the latest one was COVID, right? So we were able to support airlines through that period. We were able to support manufacturers through that period. Keep in mind, almost two-thirds of the airplanes that were built by Airbus and Boeing during COVID were financed by leasing companies because we were there. We were able to support. We have the strength of the balance sheet to go finance the aircraft. And that's actually propelled our market share even higher in the last few years.
Just out of curiosity, what sort of price ranges are we talking about? Let's say, I know that would depend on each contract, each customer, each region, but what would be a typical rate in the market for, let's say, an A320? How much would an airline pay per month to have an aircraft?
So let's take the A320neo. If you were to come to Avolon today and ask for an A320neo, you would pay north of $400,000 a month for an aircraft delivering our next delivery position, which is somewhere in the next 24 months. So that's the kind of money you're talking about. This is obviously a big sum for us normal people, but in the context of the aviation industry and the airline cost base, that is usually 10 to 15% of the airline cost base in terms of percentage of the total operating cost. So it is not that big, right? So when fuel price goes up by 20%, that could sink the airline. When lease rates go up by 20%, as they might have done in the past couple of years due to the shortage of aircraft, I do think it's not going to sink airlines. It's going to obviously make them less profitable. But in the context of history, airlines are still paying less for A320s than they would pay 12 years ago,
And are there
which is I find always fascinating.
any commitment, like initial commitments, so like upfront payments, or is it purely based structure as a month by month payment?
So there's usually a deposit at the beginning of the lease contract. So when you sign the lease, you have to wire some money just to make sure, we have some certainty that you will show up to pick up the airplane. But generally, no, that's it, right? So you pay a deposit certain number of months, like when you rent an apartment, and then you show up, you start paying your rent, hopefully on time.
And what's the type of interest rate that these type of contracts have? Is it a big is there a big spread compared to the like base rates in the market?
So, like, we don't quote, so for operating leases, we don't quote a percentage of interest rate. We just quote a rent figure, right? So, what you would pay for, rental properties or whatever. Like, if you were trying to calculate what implied interest rate is, like, usually we're talking, high single digit percentage interest rate, if you kind of back calculate for that. For some airlines, this is similar to their cost of capital. From some other airlines, is way below their cost of capital. So it is quite an attractive product.
And what happens when these aircraft become age and start to become old? Are airlines typically exercising some right to purchase, or is there a kind of like another market for older aircraft with, I guess, with lower rates? How the what does normally happen?
So it's a great question, right? Because some part of the leasing industry just looks at new aircraft. Some other part of the leasing industry looks at, middle-aged aircraft, so to speak. And another part of the leasing industry looks at what happens at the end, right? So it's quite an interesting you know, the diversification of the business model when you start looking at it. But if you focus on what do the guys do with the older aircraft, the ones that we would sell our airplanes to at some point, because we might not stick to them till the end of their useful life. What those kind of leasing companies do is they either, you know, sell them back to the airline, as you said. That is less common for very, very old aircraft. Airlines are not that interested to take very old aircraft, especially when the market is, you know, in a balanced situation. Today, as we've touched on a few times, there's a shortage of airplanes, so you might see some airlines buying them back. What usually happens at the end of airplane life is they get disassembled, right? So, you know, you're getting airplanes to 20, 25 years, and you get to the point where, you know, you're not going to be making so much money renting them as you would make parting them out, right? And selling the different parts of the aircraft. Usually what happens is when aircraft get parked, they still have some life left on some of the components. So you might have still 2 years to go on one engine, or you might have, you know, 3 years to go on the landing gear. So these components either get sold to parts brokers, or they get actually put back on lease as individual components, so as to monetize the last remaining life of the asset. So that's usually what happens when all of that is done and monetized. Yeah, the aircraft gets parted out, recycled, and hopefully that goes back into the supply chain to build more aircraft.
Mm-hmm. And is this an industry where, I guess, the... let me rephrase it. So in this industry, in the leasing industry, obviously Avolon is one of several companies, many of them based in Ireland, actually, because of some historical and other reasons that we can maybe talk about later. But basically, there's a number of companies that the airlines can go to. What are the differentiating points between these airlines? Is it because of the purely financial terms that they offer, or are there other elements that allow the leasing companies to offer some differentiated service?
Yeah, it's a great question. I love it because, you know, when you're getting into this industry for the first time, you know, it's actually hard, you know, to differentiate between leasing companies, right? Is it, you know, is it about, as you say, the amount they charge every month for the aircraft? What is it about, right? And you actually realize once you start looking at it in detail, and indeed when you're part of one of these companies like Avolon, you realize there's so much more to it. Like the aviation industry, when it comes to procuring aircraft, is so complex, right? There's so many variables. And, you know, the lease rate is just one of them. You know, there are other things such as, you know, what is the availability of aircraft you can offer your customers, right? So it's great to offer the lowest price, but if you don't have the aircraft in the amounts your customer wants or the time the customer wants, you know, you're not going to be successful. There are things such as, you know, do you have the platform to manage the asset during its life? As in, you know, when problem arises, when airlines have questions, when they want to renegotiate the lease, or when we want to do the same, do you have the capability in place, the scale of the team to manage those challenges? And that actually creates, you know, just with these three topics that I just outlined, availability, cost, and platform, that creates massive differences between leasing companies already, to the point that, you know, airlines might not just pick the cheapest available aircraft, they might just pick the lessor they trust the most, because they showed up when they had a problem, they helped them when they had to get the aircraft back, or they were the most reasonable during turbulent times. There's more I could go on, right?
Are the servicing of the aircraft, is this the responsibility of the airline or of the leasing company?
So the maintenance of the aircraft and the airworthiness of the aircraft is 99.9% of the time with the airline. So that's part of the lease agreement, right? So the lease agreement says you're free to enjoy your aircraft, and you're free to do almost as much as you want to do with the aircraft. However, you need to maintain it according to your aviation authority's requirements, and you need to give it back to us at a given point in time in certain maintenance condition or configuration condition. And that's up to the airline to manage. Then, depending on the airline situation or the airline capabilities, the lessor might step in to either monitor or even do some of the work. But we will ask for compensation on that, right? We will ask the airline to compensate us to do that.
Mm-hmm. And I guess a big part of your job, and particularly you personally of your job because of your specific role within the airline, is actually to do a bit, I mean, to look into the future and try to forecast what the demand is going to be. And here's where I would like to introduce the topic we discussed earlier, how you approach the, let's say, the topic of technological change. Because, for example, you are very active in the field of advanced air mobility, which is possibly separate from your mainline business, which is like more like traditional airliners. But I guess everything that's happening now in this industry, all the quest to become more sustainable, the discussion about new forms of propulsion, all of these will have an impact eventually on the mainstream aircraft market. What are your views on this? I know that recently at the Farnborough Air Show, Avolon signed a deal with Airbus to collaborate with the Zero-E hydrogen propulsion project, which is one of the flagship projects of Airbus in sustainability. But from outside, this looks kind of like a very distant future. And the manufacturers are building aircraft right now that will have a useful life of maybe, I don't know, 40 years from now. So how you combine both things and what's your view on where the industry is heading? Are we going to have revolutionary change that will turn upside down all the values of the existing aircraft? Or is it going to be a more progressive change? Is there going to be change at all? I'm really interested in learning what you guys think.
Yeah, lots of questions there, but I'll do my best to answer all of those, Miguel, and keep me on track if I forget any point, right? But look, I'll just start with, you know, a bit of context on why this is so important for a leasing company and why we need to get it right. So I'd say probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest decisions leasing companies make is what assets to buy and when. That could, you know, mean huge success, or that could mean huge failure, right? We, as you know, we buy aircraft that are in service for multiple decades, that are going to generate cash flows for multiple decades. So if we get the price wrong, or we get the timing wrong, or we get the airplane wrong, we could be in for a lot of pain. And you know, some lessors, although it's rare, they have gone out of business for, you know, getting in at the wrong time or picking their own aircraft. So that's really a super, super important decision to make. And then I'll just go back on the Avolon story and where we actually come from, right? So Avolon is a story of huge opportunity, huge ability to execute with speed, right? At the correct time. So the company was founded in 2010. It was launched in May of 2010 in the middle of the global financial crisis.
Yeah, so it's a very young company, actually.
Yeah. And it aimed to secure a massive opportunity in which, as I said earlier, capital was in short supply, right? So we were able to connect capital with customers, which is ultimately our day-to-day mission here, connecting that capital with airlines to help them scale. And ultimately, if we look in the, you know, 20, 30 years ahead, transform the industry, right?
What are the sources of capital typically? Is it through bond placements? I know Avolon was listed for a short while, then it was acquired by and taken private again. But what would be, for the huge amounts of capital that are needed to build a 1,000 aircraft fleet, where do you find all this amount of capital?
Yeah. So we, as you said, we were listed for a while. We've actually, Avolon has touched on all possible sources of capital throughout its history, right? So as I said, we launched in 2010, middle of global financial crisis. Debt was actually quite difficult to raise, but we saw there was more appetite to raise debt for a company like ours with, again, more stable cash flows into the future and durable assets. So ways to capitalize the leasing business, you look at private equity, which is how we started. So these are, you know, investors that, you know, we'll give you a big check, but they want out very quickly, and they usually want to make double-digit returns. At the time we launched, we were the biggest ever startup backed by private equity in the world.
Wow.
So we raised $750 million of private equity day one. Then we went on to raise $500 million of bank debt, which is another source of capital, which is usually what you need to scale up, right? You can't build a leasing business that endures for decades if you just have equity, right? You need to lever that up with some debt at a good cost. So bank debt is another source of capital. Then you have the bond market, which is a very liquid debt market for us right now, and usually very US-centric, but it's not something you can tap from day one, right? So you have to scale up usually with private equity, some bank secure debt against your portfolio, and then you rotate out of the private equity as soon as practical, which is what we did with the listing in the New York Stock Exchange in 2014. And then just as we spent a year in the New York Stock Exchange, we were taken private by Bohai Leasing, a Chinese leasing company in 2015, which was a necessary step for us to grow massively. So from 2015 to 2016, we actually had gone from publicly listed to fully private. We quadrupled the size of the business because we merged with another leasing company and bought another one. And mm-hmm. we were able to build actually a very durable platform from 2016 onwards that has enabled us to, grow out of the private equity, the public market, the equity public market, even the bank debt. It's not just such an important part of our business today. And most of our debt today comes from the bond market, as you pointed out. So it's all of those. And depending on the size of lessor and the point in time you're in, you're going to tap different sources. You are going to try, but some of the sorts actually are not really that diverse as we are, but we are really trying to keep our source of capital very diverse. So when one closes, because if there's a shock or there's a crisis somewhere, we can go to the next one.
Okay, very interesting. So yeah, obviously you have all this capital and then you need to make bets on what's the type of aircraft that is going to be in demand many years in advance. And now we are at this very interesting moment, as we were talking about, where there is this feeling that something like the next big thing should be coming in the near future, because we are still kind of squeezing efficiency from models that were designed decades ago. And we have, at the same time, there is a whole concern about the environment, about finding new ways to propel this aircraft, finding new, potentially new constructive solutions. So what are you guys doing in this field? And what is your view of the future of the industry for the coming decades, talking about mid to long term here?
Yeah. So, Mikael, we built a company that aims to be the best risk manager in the industry, right? So what does that mean? We're looking at making calculated bets all the time. So we bet on our customers, and also we bet on the assets we buy, right? As I said, one of the biggest decisions we make is what do we buy? So look over history. We were launch customers of the A330neo with Airbus. We were launch customers through our, CIT business that we acquired. Launch customers of the 787. We took the first 737 MAX delivery when it was available, and we've gotten into new business ventures all the time because we are, we are risk takers, we are innovators, and ultimately what we want is to ensure we are diversifying our bets in everything we do. So the assets we buy is definitely one of them. We started looking at the conversions of the environmental agenda and environmental concerns that public, the governments and airlines started to express in the end of the last decade, 2018, 2019, the conversions of that with the availability of new technological solutions to not just remove carbon, but also to make flying more attractive, more efficient, more productive, right? So there was a bit of a conversions come 2018, 2019, and we started thinking about how Avolon, with such a track record of innovation and placing bets, how we could play that. So we started looking at companies we could invest in and ultimately bring their products to market, to commercialize their innovations. And these were companies in the electric, hydrogen, or even new airframe configuration space. We had to put that project or that idea on hold during COVID, given we had to cure our business and support our customers, our manufacturers. But we took that challenge again in 2021, and we identified the best way to get involved in investment in new technology and commercialization of that technology was through the eVTOL business, the electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft business. And the reason why we started with such small aircraft as our first investment was that we believe, and we still believe, that electrification of flight is going to be the first new propulsion technology that's going to be available. And it's going to be available at, you know, at aircraft sizes and market sizes that are more akin to, yeah, you know, to what the eVTOL can offer than what, you know, we usually fly when we go on holidays, right? So we started small with that industry, and it so far has paid off immensely, right? We've learned a lot about electric propulsion. We were at the time the first leasing company to get involved in the space. We partnered with airlines. We built teams around this, and we advanced on the commercialization of this eVTOL industry over the past 3 years in a way that we couldn't even imagine. And the feedback we got from investors, our airline customers, even our own staff, has been incredible in taking such a bold step, in investing equity, making commitment to buy up to 500 eVTOL aircraft, and managing to place those aircraft with five airlines in just 9 months back in 2022.
Yeah.
So it's been an incredible journey, and just our first step into this area has been eVTOL.
You said you had a small step into this field, but actually, I think you're possibly, you have one of the largest eVTOL orders out there. I'm not sure if it's the largest, but one of the largest with, as you mentioned, 500 eVTOL aircraft, all of them from one developer, British eVTOL developer, Vertical Aerospace, which actually had the first crew flight, and they presented a new prototype recently, this actually in July 2024, just I think just ahead or during the Farnborough Air Show.
Yeah, during the week, yeah.
Yes, it's a really cool aircraft, the VX-4. And what I find really interesting is that you are not just working with the developer, but also working, as you mentioned, with a number of airlines around the world that are interested in using eVTOLs for their operations. Talking about, for example, Air Greenland, Gol in Brazil, Virgin Atlantic, and a few others that are, they are planning operations of some sort with this aircraft. So what made you decide for this Vertical Aerospace VX-4 aircraft compared to others? Because, I mean, there are some other eVTOL developers that are also pretty advanced and some maybe even closer to entering into service.
Yeah. So look, we applied, I don't want to make it more boring than it should be, but we actually applied the same criteria we apply when we buy a Boeing aircraft or an Embraer aircraft or any commercial airliner, right? So we look at, you know, is the aircraft going to have sufficient demand from customers? Is it going to have sufficient demand from potential entities we sell it, the aircraft to at some point? Is it going to retain its value? As in, you know, will the manufacturer be there to support? Do they have a plan to support the aircraft? And is there a supply chain available to service the aircraft throughout its life? And ultimately, you know, is it going to be an asset that we think is going to be easy to move around within the boundaries of, you know, what you can do with an eVTOL? You know, you cannot fly across the Atlantic with one of those things. But we applied those same criteria back in 2021. We did a very deep due diligence of all the players back then. And we got convinced Vertical was the right choice for various reasons. So one is the fact that they were pursuing, and they are still pursuing, EASA certification. So EASA, for those of you that are not deep into the eVTOL world, so EASA, which is the European Aviation Regulator, has laid out certification requirements that are as high as a commercial aircraft. So an A320 and an eVTOL would have the same, you know, safety margin, safety criteria, which is different route than what the FAA in the US has taken. So that was one of the starting points for us. We wanted an aircraft that we could place all around the globe. We didn't want an aircraft that can only fly in the US because the safety requirements there are different. So that was a very important one. Then we looked at, you know, is this aircraft going to be supported throughout its life? And the way to look at it was, you know, are there going to be aerospace suppliers working with Vertical Aerospace or with any other OEM to design, build, and support this aircraft? And back then, in 2021, Vertical was the only one that made it a clear strategy to partner with OEMs. Everybody else was, you know, trying to become the Tesla of the sky, doing everything on their own, which ultimately proved the wrong strategy, because nearly all of them have shifted to the OEM business model right now. And then the third point was around demand, like as simple as, can we buy these aircraft? Because in 2021 as well, most of these startups were, you know, planning to design, to build, and even to operate the aircraft on their own. And as a leasing company, we don't want to buy an aircraft that only has one operator. We want to have an aircraft that has hundreds of operators. So that business model difference that vertical presented to us back then made it the obvious choice. And they've stuck to it since that point. And actually nearly everybody else has shifted in their direction, which is very reassuring for our own strategy. So very happy with that bet and very happy with the team and the achievements they've made since then. They've flown two aircraft. As you pointed, the second one has started flying right now. That aircraft has over 60% of components built by aerospace great OEMs. And that is an aircraft that should catch the public's eye in the coming months as it starts some demo flight campaigns across the UK.
Yeah, that's going to be really cool to see because it's a really nice looking aircraft, and I'm sure and it looks great in all these liveries of the airlines. When you see the renderings, I mean, really looking forward to see it flying. But in any case, that's going to be a bit of it's going to complement the airline's mainland operation. But I think you also have a stake in the development, as we mentioned earlier. You're collaborating with Airbus in hydrogen. What's your view for the larger segments of the aviation industry that are now basically the bread and butter of companies like Avolon and of basically any airline out there in the world?
So, yeah, as I said, eVTOL is just our first step. And our ambition, which is a commitment we've made to our stakeholders, our ambition is to be a thought leader in all the clean technology developments ahead of us. And that means, you know, investing here, collaborating there, commercializing somewhere else. So eVTOL is done and it continues. We're looking now past that into the bigger aircraft, as you said, and preparing for what will be, you know, a very exciting two or three decades ahead of us. And the role that the leasing company should play in our view, and that's our strategy, is that we are a facilitator for these technology innovations. As I said earlier, we connect capital with customers, and that means connecting capital with, you know, the developers of new technology that are going to be available in the next 10, 20, 30 years. And if you start thinking about what's coming, hydrogen needs to be part of these solutions as well. You know, we see in the near term that sustainable aviation fuel will do most of the legwork to decarbonize or to compensate the carbon emissions of this industry. But if you look past 2040, 2050, you need a longer term solution. And something that people actually don't talk about that much is that you do need hydrogen to create SAF in a non-polluting way in the scale that is required. So it's all interconnected, right? So you will need understanding of the battery and electric technology that's going to be powered by hydrogen fuel cells or combustion engines that is also going to be used to create SAF. So it's all, again, very connected, and we want to play a role in everything in that regard. So why are we moving into hydrogen now? So the industry is at a point where most of the capital has flown into the electric space already. Now we need to think bigger, and we're getting close to a point where the big manufacturers need to decide what's coming next. So if we take Airbus, for example, they need to make a decision to replace the A320 family at the end of the next decade, when the program will be nearly 20 years old, or just a bit above that, actually. And the decision they will have to make go through, you know, do we replace it with a kind of current technology type of aircraft, a bit more efficient, or do we go all in with, you know, zero emissions technology, or do we do both? And we, as asset owners of over $25 billion of aircraft, we can't afford to be just going with the wind here, right? We want to get involved. And that's why we partnered with Airbus during the Farnborough show to not only understand what they're working on through their Zero E program, but also influence the design of the aircraft in a way that we think it's going to make it more attractive, and also make sure that the manufacturers considering all the nuances of aircraft design and production from a lessor standpoint. So things like timing to market, production rates, you know, residual value retention, what do you need to do with the supply chain, and so on, right? So it is going to be a very exciting project. As you said, not something that we will see flying tomorrow, but it's definitely something that is going to shape up to an aircraft that we might see in the skies, you know, in the next 10 to 15 years.
What would happen then during the transition period if that effort to build an hydrogen aircraft is successful? And as you mentioned, hydrogen as one of the ingredients to make SAF, but do you see a scenario where you get a successful hydrogen aircraft coming into service, and then what happens to all the existing fleet of thousands of aircraft that are conventionally powered? I don't know if there's a precedent for that. Maybe the advent of the jet era would be a precedent for that, when all the piston engine aircraft became obsolete, but at the time, there were fewer than there are now. So, yeah, that would be an interesting scenario to model, I guess.
Yeah. So we've done a few forecasts on that. The latest one, which I invite the audience to take a look at, is, I think it's published in our website from last year in July 2023. So that fleet forecast was looking out to 2042, and our prediction was that by then, 95% of the commercial aircraft fleet would be what you're flying in today, right? Mm-hmm. It's not something you can switch off overnight. You can't just say, okay, tomorrow I'm going to replace, you know, 30,000 aircraft with hydrogen. It's not just a technological challenge, it's just the production scalability challenge. Mm-hmm. So we don't think there's going to be an overnight switch. There can't be. And I think it's going to be in everyone's best interest for those technologies, the, you know, the A320neos or whatever upgrade is available by then, and the zero emissions technology to coexist for a while. You know, simply from first principles, there's not going to be enough airplanes being built of, let's say, the hydrogen type or hybrid or whatever the case might be. They're not going to be built fast enough. And we've seen this in the current generation of aircraft where, you know, all the way, you know, from the start of the MAX or the 320neo program, it's been very difficult to scale up production, to ramp up or back up to the levels of demand. So there will need to be some coexistence, which is good from, I think, all the angles you look at it, right? So you look at, you know, obviously the lessor angle, that's going to be good for the retention of value of our current assets. They're not going to fall a cliff overnight. It's going to be good for airlines that are able to deploy the zero emissions aircraft in some part of their network where it makes sense, where the range is appropriate, where the infrastructure is in place, and it's going to be a great testing ground. And starting small will also enable the attraction of capital required to then scale up and progressively switch to zero emissions technology. But it's going to take time. And again, we want to be a part of the solution. Avolon wants to be one of the companies that makes it happen and invests early. Time, people, and money at the right time when we see that product coming to market, if it makes sense.
Very interesting times indeed. And people that wish to learn more about what you guys are doing, and you mentioned some sustainability reports and forecasting, what's the best way to get those? Obviously, I'm going to post a link on the show notes, but people that are listening and maybe don't have access to the Allplane website, where should they go and where can they find all this information about Avolon?
So I would encourage the listeners to go on the website. There's a section where we publish all our thought leadership pieces, be it market forecasts, market outlooks, and sustainability reports and other things. We should be publishing our market outlook in the beginning of 2025, followed by our sustainability report and hopefully a fleet forecast come Paris Air Show next year. So there's a bit to go. And in the meantime, stay tuned to our LinkedIn channel. There's a lot going out there every week, you know, from what we do, our team, as well as a company, all the stuff that we're working on, we're very excited about.
Great. Yes. By the way, it's avolon.aero, not .com.
Exactly.
.aero.
Avolon.aero.
Yeah. Very good. Well, thank you so much, Mark, for this very interesting and very thorough and detailed explanation about what you guys do at Avolon, but also about the broader leasing industry, which is a part of the aviation industry that plays a very important role, but I think it's not as well known as it should be. And I hope this helps also to make it better known as well. So thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you, Mikael.
If you like this podcast, you can support us by giving it a great rating on Apple, Spotify, or whichever platform you get it from. And remember, you can, of course, subscribe to it. And you can also get regular updates through the Allplane website. That's allplane.tv. We have a newsletter where we cover the aviation industry every week with a special focus on innovation and sustainability. So give it a go. Thank you and goodbye.